The hour. Happy to get a Rich Eng visit in. And Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Rich, I was tongue in cheek talking about your piece I read last night, flying back from University of Arizona from the symposium, and you talked about Churchill and their absence from the landscape right now. And I can extend this conversation with a visit as soon as even tomorrow, because I talked to Jim Mulvihill. You talked about the situation, which is so unique, and you and I have discussed it a number of times, the way the Nevada the structure of the Nevada gaming and how signals are brought to Vegas. And explain to everybody why there's this, you know, this essentially a blackout occurring.
Well, you know, going to square one, you know, when the industry of simulcasting horse races began, Nevada has always been in the forefront. And I think the early fathers, this is long before I came out to Las Vegas, Steve, I guess they figured out that, you know, strength in numbers is a good way to negotiate. So rather than having a racetrack or a racing organization negotiate with each individual race book, it would just seem a lot more efficient and more powerful for the group to band together. So a long time ago, they formed the Nevada Paramutual Association. It's a nonprofit, and they represent all of the race books that are in operation in Nevada, and that goes from, you know, Laughlin on the Arizona border to Vegas to anything in the Pahrump or Mesquite up to Reno, Tahoe, anywhere within the state. They join the NPMA, and the NPMA negotiates for the group. You know, throughout history, there have been episodes, ups and downs, you know, within the negotiations. I think one of the most famous periods was a couple of decades ago, just before I came to town, Steve. There was an issue with Hollywood Park and the rebate situation, because there's another issue that I just remind myself that, again, Nevada was in the forefront of offering rebates to horse players. I think somebody figured out that, you know, if there was a blended takeout rate of, say, 20%, and they were paying 3 or 4% back to the racetrack, well, that left 16 or 17% to kind of play with. And so, rather than the race book keeping all of the 16 or 17%, somebody figured out, well, if I give a few percentage points to my biggest players, my whales, you know, that will make them more loyal and tend to bet more. So that was where that industry actually evolved to, Steve, in the history books. So, anyway, to bring it to the current structure of the column that I wrote, the first signal that actually during the fourth quarter of 2019 that was blacked out in Nevada was the little Mahoning Valley race course. And I don't know exactly, you know, all the issues. A lot of times the players keep these statistics and numbers close to the vest, but they could not agree upon a rate. And so we did, you know, we still don't have Mahoning Valley race course in this market. And that was October 25th when they opened. And then 2 days later on October 27th, Churchill Downs opened. And again, they weren't able to reach an agreement with CDI and the NPMA. And, you know, my experience over the couple of decades is usually these things get solved in a day or two. Maybe we lose the opening day, maybe we lose even the second day, but eventually the power of the dollar of making money, it gets the two people to agree upon a number, because nobody likes to have money kind of drain away and not come into the coffers. But this situation never came to fruition. The entire meet of Churchill was blacked out. You know, I think that makes a powerful statement in the long run, in the fact that, you know, while Churchill and the NPMA have not talked about what they're looking for, you know, I've been in the game long enough, and you too, Steve, to know that I think Churchill is looking for a much bigger number, and they've got the leverage of the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday of May. So, you know, maybe they weren't as willing to move as they had done in previous years. So remains to be seen where this will go. They had recently purchased Turfway Park, and now the Turfway Park signal, which opened on December 4th, is also blacked out. So that's where we stand today as far as that goes. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I hope everything gets resolved, because the people who get injured the most are us horse players, because we don't get to bet on these products. And here in Nevada, one thing we have available is other products. We have other race signals to bet on. We also have something called sports gambling, which people can put their attention to. So horse racing needs us, the horse players. And, you know, it doesn't serve anyone well to kind of piss us off, you know?
Well, and this gets back to something we referenced the other day, you know, that era that is really essentially, I mean, this is a throwback to the signal wars, quote unquote, that, you know, there was that really difficult time where, you know, it seemed like, you know, there would be periods of blackout, you know, for certain signals and on certain, you know, on certain platform, ADW platforms. And a lot of that has really gone away. This is a bit of a throwback to that. And, you know, not only does it hurt us as players that, you know, that just want to, you know, have access to the signal, it also hurts the horsemen and, you know, and the owners. I mean, money that is taken out of circulation in their direction on those signals, that money goes into purse accounts. It's a negative for everybody. So I get that, you know, the bricks and mortar, in this case, CDI, they're trying to leverage the value of the associate, you know, properties and the signal, but it's not healthy for anybody. Frankly, there's also this rift between them and DRF that has, you know, continued. And I don't know how much effort is going into, you know, into ending their, you know, the dispute, but it stems from DRF adding a an ADW of their with their nameplate, and some of the negotiations that went into that that were handled poorly. More so by DRF than by CDI, and it's left this, you know, this gash in the relationship that, you know, for instance, you can't access replays. You can't go and see replays of the Churchill properties via DRF. So none of this is good for the game. Even if we understand and are sympathetic toward, you know, the whys and wherefores of how, you know, understanding how these rifts develop.
Yeah, you know, you touched upon a point that you've probably talked about it on other shows with other guests and to your listeners, but for those of who are not familiar with what you're talking about, is that CDI and DRF do have a disagreement. And one of the issues that I've been contacted on more than once from horse players from other states is that if they go to Churchill Downs, if they go to Arlington, if they go to Fairgrounds, any track that is owned by CDI, they cannot buy a daily racing form. It is not allowed on the premises. So, you know, I get people writing me an email saying, you know, what's going on here? Well, it's been going on for a while. And so I know the form has tried to set up alternative outlets around those racetracks where people can pick up the daily racing form and, you know, bring into the racetrack. I don't believe that the people are stopped from bringing a racing form onto the premises, but they can't buy one on the premises of those tracks. So, you know, I wish there was less divisiveness in our industry. You know, I mean, we're fighting. Everyone seems to be fighting over a pie that unfortunately is not growing as fast as we like, or maybe it's not even growing at all. But as the pieces of the pie gets, you know, more and more precious, then people are digging their heels in more instead of working with each other more. And it's kind of disappointing to see. Steve, I know you were at the University of Arizona Symposium. I've gone there plenty of times myself in the past. And, you know, people, you know, exchange ideas. And there's a lot of great ideas that get bantered about between the different groups and the attendees. The thing that has always disappointed me over the years is how many of those great ideas get implemented. It's one thing to say something. It's another thing to do something. So, you know, we always like to hold the people to the fire, their feet to the fire, to see if they actually do what they say they would like to do, because that would improve the game in all aspects.
No doubt. I touched on this earlier. In fact, Pete Pornatel and I early in the show too, you know, that part of it, the ideas, and I participated in that, it's got to be, 3 years ago, that the 45 ideas in 45 minutes, where each of us had to come up with 9 ideas, and, you know, we presented them, and you know, 5 times 9 and 45 ideas, and yeah, you know, there's always something provocative, and the difficulty in implementing so many, you know, so many initiatives or suggestions, it invariably in the game, it's a question of momentum, and it only typically takes one, you know, one sizable entity to get something going. And, you know, whether, and we can point to so many different things, Rich. When steroids needed to, you know, be pushed out of the game, when the Mid-Atlantic did it as a group, and you know, from there, the various jurisdictions, and all of a sudden, in 18 months, steroids were gone from the game. I brought up the point about the television, the proliferation of this era's television coverage that's been, you know, that was started by the Jockey Club with the Jockey Club tour on Fox, and you know, and then NYRA, in concert with the growth of their ADW, their expansion of, you know, the Saratoga show. Now they're in 70% of the cable systems nationwide. There's more racing on TV now than at any time in the past. Yeah, plus you fold in, you know, what TVG does. I mean, there's a lot of things that just that only takes one organization to, you know, to start to tip dominoes. And you know, there's also the imitation factor. You know, we talk about it in sports where a champion, you know, wins a title, and they do it with some wrinkle. If it's football, it's some wrinkle in their offense or defense, and then suddenly all the other organizations start to incorporate it. You know, it's the same is true here. If somebody sees something working, it gives the other organizations more confidence to try it. So it's strictly a matter of convincing one, you know, one potentially influential entity into doing something that is probably the right thing to do, and the rest of the dominoes seem to fall. So it just takes somebody with a little initiative and a little gumption, and people can't be afraid of trying. I mean, that's why Canterbury deserves so much credit for what they did, for trying a takeout reduction, and as we've explained since, just because more money went back into the hands of players because of the reduced takeout at Canterbury, it didn't guarantee that when people played with that money, you know, when they churned it back, that every cent was going to go right back to Canterbury. That's why the concept has to permeate industry wide to see the benefit.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to go back to the point you made when you started bringing up more horse racing on television. I mean, that's a really dramatic improvement in the sport. I'm really happy to see it. I know I've been in the business long enough to remember when ESPN was a fledgling sports network, and a person named Jim Wilburn, along with Chris Lincoln, developed the company called Winter Communications, and they basically brokered between the racetracks and ESPN to get all kinds of horse racing, stakes races, and product on the sports network, and that was successful for a long, long time, and I tip my hat to those gentlemen. And you know, getting horse racing on television, I think to some degree in this modern era has become easier, and I think a lot of it has to do with cost factors and also the proliferation of additional sports networks. Now there's not just ESPN, but you know, NBC has a sports network, CBS has a sports network, Fox has a sports network. So there are so many more sports-focused networks that need content. And a lot of them are paying big money for the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, even the NHL, their dollars are growing. But one thing that horse racing has that's much more cost efficient than those majors, and even college football, college sports, is that the rights fees are so much lower, if any, for some of these products and races to get on television. So if you can eliminate the humongous rights fees that the networks have to pay to the leagues, then you've got to start somewhere. So you got a launching point, and then the money can be put into production, and they can turn around and make profit on the network's end. So I really, the way you capsulize how racing has improved its footprint in television is really, really good. And you know, there's certainly more growth. It's you know, we have not hit the ceiling by any stretch in the imagination. So that's really good for growing our game. Because when you get on television, that means you're happening, and viewers watch it and hopefully get interested in what we've got to present.
Well, and the funny thing about you know, where we are, and you know, obviously racing, to some degree, racing entities have had to, you know, purchase time, especially when it's come to special events. Mm-hmm. But what's unusual about racing or really this entity versus others is that we've got a way to monetize and to quantify the result and to pay back. I mean, it's an investment spend, essentially.
Because yeah, it's you know, you're right. We're investing in ourselves. You know, getting
exactly.
Our product in front of more eyeballs.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of people out there who are channel surfing, and all of a sudden they see a horse race, and it's like, what the heck is this? You know, we're in such an, I think people forget we're in a real niche industry. You know, out of the legion of sports fans, there are very few of them that eyeball horse racing on a regular basis. It's a very narrow niche. So anything you can do to try to expand that horizon is positive in my mind.
Oh, there's no doubt, and you know, there's all kinds of correlation. You know, the studies of you know, what it does to handle, and you know, I know that some people scoff at you know, at the gaming network when it comes to, for instance, TVG and putting up. You know, putting up the pick fours and the pick fives and the plays that hosts and that the handicappers you know, are featured, but the results speak for themselves. They know that, you know, that it promotes play. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's a whole different argument to be made about the value of that from a tout, scenario. I mean, you and I think would both agree, Rich, that when we provide analysis, the ideas that we understand that certain people are certain players are just going to take it and use the selections as offered and more or less just build tickets around those opinions, and others are going to take them and weave their own impressions in with our opinions. And you know, that's however people want to use the opinions, and as you know, we just hope that they're productive and we're giving people, you know, we're giving people. So that's our approach, you know, that we're trying to help people win by offering an opinion that we hope they value. You know, I understand why some people go ahead and just bet, you know, those plays as presented. Yeah, some are just doing it for action. You know, they just want to watch and have a, you know, why does anybody bet? You know, it's to enhance your enjoyment of what you're watching.
Yeah, that's true. I know personally myself, Steve. I've really dedicated myself to trying to focus a lot of my energy and a lot of my attention to newcomers and bringing the casuals into more interest into horse racing. I wrote a book called Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, which is part of the Dummies brand of how-to books. And, you know, hopefully I've been able to introduce a lot of people who had never seen a horse race and, you know, all of a sudden around the Kentucky Derby or the Triple Crown time or around the Breeders' Cup, their interest gets heightened a little bit and they want to buy an introductory book. And a lot of them have bought Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. And I still to this day, Steve, have email back and forth with a lot of readers who bought the book over the years. I always welcome their questions and things like that. I never have a problem answering them. And then with the sheet that I've been doing, you know, I worked for 17 years with the Las Vegas Review Journal, and then now I'm doing my own handicapping sheet, and I've got a nice subscriber list. But you know, there's a lot of people who just kind of lurk, and they've never paid me a nickel, which is fine. It doesn't matter to me. But what you know, one thing I do, Steve, to try to get people interested in maybe betting or, you know, the getting more deeply involved in the game is I put my sheet up for free, usually late in the day, so that people can look at it and maybe bet the last two races, the late daily double at Del Mar or Santa Anita or Los Alamitos. There's a lot of people who just take advantage of that free offer, which is fine. But, you know, hopefully at some point they make some money and want to get more involved in the game. So I do have altruistic angles for putting the product up for free late in the day. I do want people to bet, and I do want people to cash, and I do want people to come away from the game with a positive attitude and wanting a little more of it.
Yeah, exactly. On that, and I'm delighted you brought up the book, because we're at about, in fact, I'm a couple days late, probably a week late. Usually the first week in December, we do our book suggestions as last-minute Christmas shopping support, and your book is always on that list. You know, if you've got sons, daughters, friends, anybody that is, you know, is learning the game and is wading in and is taking an interest. You know, people that you brought to Del Mar, Saratoga, Keeneland, whatever. You know, people that you know would like to take that next step. You know, Rich's book is really that kind of template for an introduction, you know, to the game. And it's more than just for, you know, I know that the Dummy series, you know, makes it seem like it's for people that don't know anything. But if you've got, you know, the basic understanding, it's probably even better, because it fills in some of those blanks and helps people, you know, get to the next step in their acumen learning curve.
You know, I agree with that. I know one thing that I've had conversationally with people who have bought the book, and even just, you know, veteran horse players, because I see tons of them, hardcore horse players in town, is sometimes we have a tendency maybe to look for shortcuts in our handicapping work. Sometimes we get into bad habits, whether it's handicapping bad habits or betting bad habits. And the thing about when you're betting money, if you have any sorts of bad habits, usually that leads to losing wagers. And, you know, nobody likes to lose money. So if you're, say, on a losing streak, one thing I know I like to do to myself is I try to look inward and see what the heck I've been doing lately, that maybe I've gone off kilter. And, you know, heck, I even reread sections of my own book, Steve, to remind myself, well, this is the right way to do it. Somehow I got off track. And so you want to develop good habits and also good money management and good ticket structures and all kinds of things that lead to hopefully, you know, winning money. So, yeah, the book is not just for people who know absolutely nothing about the sport, but hopefully it also reminds us to keep up our good habits and to eliminate our bad habits and mistakes that we make in the handicapping and betting.
Which lends a question, Rich. What did you use when you started to enhance your play? And of course, you worked within, you know, the racetrack publicity side of things, you know, racing communications departments. But as you cultivated your own interest as a player, what were the resources you were using?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question, because the first book that I bought and read about thoroughbred horse racing was the Tom Ainsley book.
Sure.
I forget the exact title, but it was kind of an A to Z book in his era. And Tom Ainsley is the name that Richard Carter used. Richard Carter was actually
yes.
his real name. And when I started at NYRA in 1979, I did an internship at Aqueduct out of the St. John's University program that I was matriculating in. I had a chance to meet Richard Carter in the press box at Aqueduct, and you would have thought that I'd met Santa Claus. It was the first book that I read. I read it cover to cover probably three times, and then to actually meet the author, Richard Carter, I was just so effusive in praising him, and it really hooked me into horse racing. For as many decades as I've been involved in the game, that was the initial hook. And I just told them all kinds of nice things, and I'm happy where it's taken me in my journey, in my life.
Well, and I've got it. Everybody's got it on their shelf. Ainsley's Guide to Complete Guide, I think. Complete Guide to Thoroughbred Racing. I've explained this too. Ainsley and you know, sadly, he didn't get a chance to. I mean, he may have had second editions and may have added or modernized or brought up to date certain aspects. When you look at it now, there's a lot of things about that Ainsley wrote that are now, you know, out of date, honestly. But a lot of the basic structure of understanding, you know, how the game works and how, you know, the real foundation of handicapping, it's still there. A lot of the things about, you know, weight and you know, the frequency of how often horses are going to run, you know, that has changed. But I read Ainsley too, and Buyer on Speed, and you know, all the Picking Winners, of course, and Davidowitz, Betting Thoroughbreds, you know, and then for years would discuss concepts with Steve on the air. Betting Thoroughbreds is to some degree the catcher in the rye of the original. I remember saying that to Davidowitz, that he must have been in a stream of consciousness, because my own reading of it, it just felt like there were so many things that were, you know, moments of clarity type reading in the original Betting Thoroughbreds.
And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Steve Davidowitz the person who first came up with the term key race?
He says he is. He said he did. He takes credit. There's a lot of things that are probably debatable about Steve's memory of the late Davidowitz, who we lost earlier this year. I guess, you know, it's funny, not funny, but it does make me realize that you get to this point on the calendar, Rich. And those kinds of columns, you know, Barbara Livingston will have her rotogravure of horses that we lost this year. And yeah. And it is that time of year, too. In fact, next week when we talk, we'll be doing some year-end stuff.
Sounds good. You know, Steve was someone who I'd met also early in my career, because when I was working in the publicity office at NYRA, Steve would come in for the big races, like the Belmont Stakes and the Travers, and he was writing for the Minneapolis Star Tribune covering Canterbury in those days. And then he moved out here in the later years to Las Vegas, and we had a chance to get together once in a while. And he's someone I miss. He was a good egg.
Some character, boy. Rich Eng, we'll wrap up 2019 when we talk next week.
Okay, that sounds good, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Rich Eng, of course, on Twitter for you, Rich Eng for Pro Pick, and at RaceDayLasVegas.com when his Southern California analysis is out for start up for the Santa Anita season, which I think is it 2 weeks from today? It is. Oh, my God. 2 weeks from today is opening day at Santa Anita. Crazy. Tomorrow, weekend preview, and we'll dive into the first stakes card at Gulfstream, the first graded stake card, which they drew yesterday. The Rampart, the Sugar Swirl, Harlan's Holiday, and the Fort Lauderdale. Ed Burghardt is going to retire after the weekend at Los Al. We'll reach out to Ed. Just a tremendous career. And Saturday, they're giving away Ed Burghardt bobbleheads, which every Los Al goer will treasure, undoubtedly. Some good action around today. New York picks back up, and I thought a couple of good races at Gulfstream and Fairgrounds today as well. We'll do it all tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Good luck if you're playing. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The quest for $1 million is underway, but there are...
Whether at home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.